Usually when we talk about solid objects, like a structural steel beam or the turbine in a jet engine, or even just, the chair you are sitting on right now.
Right, there's this, I mean, we just expect permanence from those things.
Exactly. It feels like solid math. Like you knock on a thick piece of cast iron, it hurts your knuckles, and your brain just categorizes that object and basically says, okay, that space is completely full.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's comforting to view the physical world as a sort of binary thing, right? Something is either solid mass or it's empty space.
Yeah, you don't really question it.
Right, because we rely on that density for, well, structural integrity, for
Right.
safety, and just for our general understanding of how reality actually operates.
But then you step into the world of advanced material science and you look at what is actually happening inside that metal at the atomic level. And
It's a completely different story.
it really is. Suddenly, that solid steel beam is, well, honestly, it's full of ghosts. I mean, we are looking at a structural landscape that is defined not by what is there, but by what is missing.
Yeah, the underlying physics reveals something pretty wild there. The absolute definition of our physical reality is imperfection.
Which sounds so counterintuitive.
It does. But it turns out that specific imperfection is the only reason the physical world works or adapts or changes at all, really.
So welcome to today's deep dive. We've got a really fascinating stack of research in front of us today, led by this brilliant foundational paper from Cambridge's HKDH Padatia.
Yeah, and alongside that, we have some incredible experimental insights from materials scientists like Alok Pal and David Matlock.
Right. And we are exploring a phenomenon known as the Kirkendall effect. And I promise you, by the end of this deep dive, you're going to look at every solid object around you completely differently.
You really will.
We are exploring how nothingness-like, literally empty space inside solid metal, is actually the secret driver of how materials change, shapeshift, and sometimes catastrophically fail.
Because it challenges our most basic engineering assumptions. You know, we tend to think that absolute perfection, like a flawless atomic grid, is the ultimate goal.
Right, the ideal state.
Exactly. But if you actually achieved a mathematically perfect crystal structure, you would basically freeze the universe.
Freeze the universe.
Yeah, it would completely prevent any progress. No diffusion, no transformation could ever happen.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can get to the Kirkendall effect and how it impacts, the engineering of our world, we have to understand what a piece of metal actually looks like at the microscopic scale.
Right, we have to zoom way, way in.
Yeah. And to wrap my head around the structure, I kept thinking of one of those sliding tile puzzles.
Oh, yeah, the little plastic ones.
You know the ones, the plastic grids where you have to slide the little squares around to unscramble a picture.
The mechanics of those puzzles actually provide a remarkably accurate way to visualize a crystal lattice, believe it or not.
Well, think about it. Imagine if every single space in that plastic grid was filled with a tile.
The puzzle would be totally locked up.
Completely. Nothing can move. And the picture can never change. For any piece to slide, you absolutely require that one empty square.
You have to have that missing piece.
Right. And in material science, that empty square is called a vacancy.
Yeah, and a vacancy is simply, well, it's a missing atom in an otherwise ordered crystal structure.
Which, again, feels like a mistake.
It does. You might instinctively assume that a pure, flawless crystal would be the most natural, sort of lowest energy state for a metal to settle into.
Because nature likes things tidy, right?
You'd think so. But the laws of thermodynamics dictate otherwise, and specifically because of something called configurational entropy.
Configurational entropy. Okay, break down how that actually forces a solid piece of metal to have holes in it.
Well, think about it in terms of statistical mechanics. If you have a theoretically perfect pure crystal containing exactly one mole of atoms,
Which is a massive amount of atoms.
oh, huge, 6.0, 2 times 10 to the 23rd. In that perfect crystal, there is only one single distinguishable way to arrange all those atoms. It is one perfect microstate.
Like a completely full locked grid.
Yes, but the universe strongly favors chaos, or, higher entropy. The moment you remove just one single atom from that massive grid to create a vacancy,
Just one.
just one, you haven't just created an empty space, you've created a combinatorial explosion.
Because now things can move around.
Exactly. You suddenly enable millions upon millions of alternative ways to arrange the remaining atoms around that empty space, all while maintaining the exact same macro level appearance.
That makes sense.
So the configurational entropy absolutely skyrockets. And because nature is always driven toward higher entropy, there is a fundamental physical force driving the formation of that vacancy.
So the metal is essentially compelled by the laws of physics to be imperfect.
It is entirely unavoidable. Now, creating a vacancy does require an energy input. That's what we call the enthalpy of formation.
Because you have to break the bonds.
Right. You have to physically break bonds to remove an atom from its lattice site. So a thermodynamic compromise is naturally reached between the energy it takes to make the whole and the entropy you gain by having it.
A balancing act.
Basically, yeah. You end up with a strict equilibrium concentration of vacancies for any given temperature. A perfectly full crystal is thermodynamically impossible in any practical circumstance.
That blows my mind. The universe refuses to allow a perfect solid. But, how many of these empty spaces are we actually talking about here?
Well, it depends heavily on the thermal energy in the system. If you take a metal close to its melting point where the atoms are vibrating intensely.
Right, things are heating up.
Yeah. The equilibrium concentration is typically around 10 to the power of -6. So that means roughly 1 in a million atomic sites is completely vacant.
1 in a million. I mean, that sounds incredibly tiny.
It does sound small. But when you consider the sheer density of a metallic lattice, the raw numbers are staggering.
There are just so many atoms.
Exactly. And the data shows we aren't just dealing with single isolated missing atoms either.
Who else is there?
We also see what are called divacancies, which are pairs of missing atoms located right next to each other.
Oh, so they clump up.
Yeah. In a metal like platinum, the concentration of those divacancies is about 10% of the single monovacancies.
Wow. And, you know, there was a detail in the research that completely hijacked my attention regarding hydrogen.
Oh, the hydrogen effect is fascinating.
Because 1 in a million vacancies is one thing, but that baseline changes dramatically under certain chemical conditions, right?
It drastically alters the landscape. When you introduce interstitially dissolved hydrogen into the lattice of metals like nickel, palladium, platinum, or iron,
it rewrites the rules.
It completely rewrites the thermodynamic balance. These tiny hydrogen atoms, they squeeze into the interstitial spaces between the main metal atoms.
So they're kind of wedging themselves in?
Right. But their presence vastly lowers the energy required to form a vacancy. So the hydrogen actually drives the formation of many, many more empty spaces than you would ever find in the pure metal alone.
How much of an increase are we talking about, though?
In some specific conditions, the concentration of vacancies can shoot all the way up to 20%.
Wait, 20% of the solid metal is just missing?
Yeah, 1/5 of the atomic sites become completely empty.
That is insane.
And as a direct consequence, you see a measurable drop in the overall physical density of the material, and the ability for atoms to move around, the diffusivity massively spikes.
Simply because there's so much more open space to move into.
Exactly.
Okay, so our solid steel beam is actually this bustling grid of sliding tiles with millions of empty spaces. But here's where it gets really interesting, because I have to push back a little here, or at least admit some intuitive confusion.
Sure, what's sticking?
Why do atoms need holes to move in the first place? I mean, if the metal is tightly packed, couldn't two atoms just bump into each other and directly swap places?
Like trading seats.
Right, like two people squeezing past each other in a narrow hallway. My intuition says they should just rotate around each other.
It's a highly logical assumption. And in fact, early materials, scientists assumed a similar mechanism.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But what's fascinating here is the underlying physics of what you're describing, what we call direct place exchange. It presents a massive energy barrier.
Because they're too close together.
Right. Think about the electron clouds surrounding those atoms. If two atoms in a tightly packed solid crystal try to squeeze past each other, it causes severe localized distortion in the surrounding crystal structure.
They'd be pushing everything else out of the way.
Yes. The sheer physical force required to warp all those neighboring atoms out of the way is astronomically high.
So it's like trying to swap two bricks in the middle of a fully built brick wall without removing them first.
Exactly.
The friction and pressure are just too immense.
That paints the picture perfectly. Now, there is an alternative called ring diffusion, where a whole circle of atoms rotates together in a synchronized loop to distribute that distortion.
Okay, like a revolving door.
Sort of, but that really only happens frequently in liquids or amorphous solids, where there's a lot more free space to begin with.
Makes sense.
And, well, in materials with very open diamond cubic crystal structures, like silicon or germanium, atoms can actually detach and squeeze through the gaps in what we call interstitial positions.
But for structural metals?
For the vast majority of densely packed structural metals, the primary way anything moves is by an atom breaking its bonds and jumping into an adjacent vacant site, vacancy diffusion.
But wait, you just said earlier that at near melting temperatures, only one in a million sites is empty.
Right.
If I'm an atom waiting for a single vacancy to arrive next to me so I can make a move, that feels less like an organized system and more like being stuck in the middle of a wildly vibrating sold-out stadium waiting for a single empty seat to randomly migrate its way over to me.
That's a great visual. And that exact intuition is why scientists dismissed vacancy diffusion for years.
They thought it was too slow.
Yeah, they looked at that 1 in a million ratio and concluded it was mathematically way too small to account for the sheer volume of diffusion they were observing in real-world metallurgy.
So how did they finally prove that the atoms were actually using those empty stadium seats to travel?
This brings us to Ernest Kirkendall's brilliant experiment.
Ah, the Kirkendall effect.
Exactly. It was conceptually simple, but entirely conclusive. Kirkendall took two different metals, let's just call them metal A and metal B, and welded them together into a single solid block.
Okay.
But right at the initial interface where the two metals met, he embedded inert marker wires. Think of them as microscopic finish lines drawn directly on the metal boundary.
Okay, so a block of metal A welded to metal B with little wire markers sandwiched right in the weld.
Right. Then they elevated the temperature of this block to give the atoms the thermal energy they needed to start diffusing across the boundary.
To get the atoms jumping.
Exactly. Now, if atoms moved by directly swapping places with each other, your hallway squeeze scenario, then for every single atom of metal A that moved to the right, an atom of metal B would have to move to the left.
Because they're trading places. So the volumetric exchange would be perfectly symmetrical.
Right. One for one. The boundary wouldn't move.
The marker wires would stay exactly in the middle.
But that symmetry is entirely absent in reality. Because metal A and metal B are different elements, they possess different atomic mobilities.
Meaning they jump at different speeds?
Yes. They jump into vacancies at completely different frequencies. So let's say metal A diffuses significantly faster than metal B. This creates a massive traffic imbalance.
Oh, I see. More atoms are rushing across the border in one direction than the other.
Exactly. So there is a net flow of physical mass heading one way.
A net flow past those inert marker wires.
Yes, a massive net flow. Because physical mass is building up on one side of the interface and draining from the other side, the entire specimen, the actual physical block of solid metal, literally shifts along the laboratory bench over time.
Wait, the physical chunk of metal just crawls across the table?
At a microscopic scale, yeah.
Yeah.
The entire lattice shifts to accommodate the uneven flow of mass, and the markers visibly migrate away from their original center point.
That is wild.
And a direct place exchange mechanism completely fails to explain that physical shift. You can only have an unequal flow of mass if the atoms are independently jumping into empty spaces.
Because the faster moving atoms are using up the vacancies on the opposite side.
Exactly, leaving their own empty spaces behind them as they travel.
Okay, take this specific copper-nickel diffusion couple we saw in David Matlock's research. Because that result always felt completely counterintuitive to me.
Oh, the copper-nickel laminate is a textbook illustration of this.
So they weld pure copper and pure nickel together. And the copper diffuses into the nickel much faster than the nickel diffuses into the copper.
Right.
But copper has a lower melting temperature than nickel. Usually a lower melting point implies weaker atomic bonds. You would intuitively think it would be easier for the nickel atoms to break their rigid bonds and invade the softer copper. Why is it the exact opposite?
It comes down to intrinsic atomic mobility overriding the raw bond strength. The copper atoms are simply more mobile within that specific crystal lattice.
They just move better.
Yeah, they break their bonds and flood into the nickel side at a much higher rate.
And because all this copper mass is rushing over to the nickel side, it's leaving behind all these empty spaces, the vacancies on the copper side of the weld.
You have a massive net flow of physical matter in one direction, which absolutely requires an equal and opposite net flow of invisible vacancies in the other direction.
Just trading matter for nothingness.
Exactly. Millions of these empty spaces are flooding backward into the pure copper.
And they don't just stay as scattered individual missing atoms, do they? They clump together. They condense. Just like water vapor condensing into a physical raindrop, these atomic vacancies reach a supersaturation point and condense together to form actual microscopic pores.
Literal structural voids inside the solid metal.
Yes. This is what we call Kirkendall porosity.
So why should you, as a listener, care if a piece of copper gets a little microscopic porosity on the inside?
Oh, it's a big deal for engineering.
So let me try an analogy here. It feels like a multi-lane highway where cars in one specific lane are exiting the highway way faster than new cars are entering.
I like that.
Eventually, you don't just have a few empty car lengths. You end up leaving behind this massive concentrated traffic jam of empty space that eventually gets so large it turns into a physical sinkhole that compromises the actual concrete of the road itself.
That's spot on. And if we connect this to the bigger picture and scale this up from a lab anomaly to industrial manufacturing, that sinkhole effect becomes a critical design parameter.
It goes from being a quirk to a massive problem.
Or a massive tool. The Kirkendall effect isn't just a fun physics quirk. It is a fundamental structural hurdle and sometimes an ingenious tool in high-tech engineering.
Okay, let's talk about it being used as a tool first. Because if you're building a structural component, voids sound like a disaster. But they actually use this to manufacture shape memory alloys, right?
Specifically, nickel titanium, often referred to as nitinol. These are the fascinating metamaterials that you can bend completely out of shape, and when you apply heat, they magically snap back to their original programmed form.
Which is incredible, but the manufacturing is tough, isn't it?
The engineering challenge is that the final intermetallic nickel-titanium alloy is incredibly brittle. It is extremely difficult to roll out into flat sheets or complex shapes for manufacturing without it fracturing.
So how do you physically manufacture a sheet of metal that shatters when you put it through a rolling machine?
Professor Kuji Tsuchiya's research outlines a brilliant workaround. Pure nickel and pure titanium on their own are both quite ductile. They bend and roll beautifully.
Okay, so you start with them separate.
Exactly. So engineers take alternating sheets of pure nickel and pure titanium, stack them together into a multi-layered composite sandwich, and roll that raw composite through the heavy machinery into the final complex shape they need.
So they shape it while it's still two separate, highly bendable metals.
Right. Once it is molded into the perfect shape, they apply intense heat.
To trigger the diffusion.
Exactly. The thermal energy causes the nickel and titanium atoms to start diffusing across the boundaries. They mix together right there in the solid state to form the final shape memory alloy.
But wait, because of the Kirkendall effect, their diffusion rates are highly asymmetrical.
Exactly. The nickel diffuses at a different speed than the titanium, which leaves behind a massive trail of Kirkendall porosity tiny voids embedded permanently inside the new shape memory sheet.
So they successfully get their shape-shifting metal sheet, but it comes with a mandatory side effect of built-in microscopic Swiss cheese holes.
The porosity is the price of manufacturing. They have to rigorously account for that altered structural density in the final design.
Wow. It's one thing when structural density is at stake, but what happens when you throw electricity into the mix? The research mentioned some serious engineering gymnastics required just to deal with these atomic traffic jams and superconductors.
Oh, yeah. Porosity in a structural metal is bad, but a void in a superconductor is an absolute electrical hazard.
I can imagine.
To manufacture certain high-field superconducting magnets, engineers rely on an intermetallic compound called niobium-310.
Okay.
But just like our sheet memory alloy, niobium-310 is tremendously brittle. You cannot simply pull it into the long, ultra-thin wires required for electrical cable.
So they employ a similar diffusion trick.
They do. They take rods of pure niobium and embed them inside a matrix of bronze, which is a copper-tin alloy.
A composite again?
Right. They draw this massive composite out into thousands of long, ultra-thin filaments. This works seamlessly because niobium and bronze are both highly ductile.
Okay, so they pull the wires, and then what?
Once the wires are drawn out to the correct diameter, they bake them.
And the kinetics of the tin migration take over. The tin atoms get thermally excited and start jumping into vacancies to cross the border into the niobium.
Yes. The tin aggressively diffuses out of the bronze matrix and reacts with the niobium to form the niobium-3-tin superconductor, right there in the solid state inside the wire.
That's so clever.
It is. But because the tin is vacating the bronze at such a high rate, it leaves behind an opposite concentrated flow of vacancies.
The empty stadium seats are piling up.
Exactly. If you look at high magnification electron cross-sections of these superconducting wires, you see dark, continuous rings of Kirkendall porosity forming right on the perimeters of the filament.
That's incredible. But the research also notes there's a pure copper core running right down the middle of all this that needs protecting from this atomic migration.
Yeah, they absolutely require a pure copper core running down the center of the cable to control dangerous electrical eddy currents. But if that migrating tin accidentally wanders into the pure copper core instead of heading toward the niobium, it thoroughly ruins the electrical conductivity of the copper.
Oh, wow. So how do they stop it?
Engineers actually have to wrap the pure copper core in a solid diffusion barrier made of tantalum, purely to act as an atomic wall to block the rogue tin atoms from getting through.
That is literal atomic traffic control.
It really is.
They are building microscopic fences out of tantalum to force the tin to only diffuse toward the niobium, all while trying to structurally manage the sinkholes of empty space forming behind it.
It requires a phenomenal level of metallurgical control.
I'll say.
But, you know, you can build a tantalum fence inside a wire. You can't always do that when the operating environment itself is actively trying to destroy the metal.
Right, like in an engine or something.
Exactly. Take the aerospace industry. The turbine blades inside modern jet engines are made of incredibly advanced nickel-based superalloys. These blades operate in combustion environments exceeding 1,000 degrees Celsius.
That is absurdly hot. At that temperature, the oxygen in the air must want to react with and corrode the metal almost instantly.
The oxidation would destroy the blade, which is why aerospace engineers coat the exterior of the turbine blades with a specialized nickel-aluminum alloy.
Like a protective skin.
Right. This coating provides tremendous resistance against high-temperature oxidation. But consider the physical setup. The interior is a nickel-based superalloy, and the exterior skin is a nickel-aluminum alloy.
Two different metals touching.
You have two different metals in direct physical contact, baking continuously at 1,000 degrees.
Oh, the thermal energy is going to trigger massive interdiffusion? The Kirkendall effect is unavoidable here.
The interdiffusion happens relentlessly at that boundary. The atoms swap across the interface at varying speeds, and you get a massive, continuous buildup of Kirkendall porosity forming exactly at the boundary between the structural blade and its protective coating.
Right on the seam.
Yes. As these microscopic voids grow and link up along the interface, they compromise the physical adhesion.
Because there's nothing left to hold on to.
Exactly. If enough voids connect, the protective skin can literally spall or peel off while the jet engine is running at full thrust.
Which is terrifying. But it perfectly illustrates why understanding the dynamics of nothingness is just as critical as understanding the structural metal itself.
Absolutely.
And that extreme heat dynamic isn't just an aerospace problem.
Yeah.
The automotive sector fights the exact same battle with hot press forming steels, right?
The underlying physics is identical. To manufacture the incredibly strong 1 gigapascal steel components used in modern car chassis to protect passengers in a crash, they take boron steel sheets and heat them to over 900 degrees Celsius to soften them.
Just to be able to bend them.
Right. Then they stamp them into complex shapes using chilled, water-cooled dyes that instantly quench the metal.
Locking it in place.
That rapid temperature drop forces the steel into a highly rigid, ultra-strong crystalline structure called martensite.
But heating a thin sheet of steel to 900 degrees in an open factory means it's going to instantly oxidize and scale before it ever reaches the stamping die.
Right. So to prevent that scaling, they pre-coat the steel with an aluminum silicon alloy.
Oh, here we go again.
Yep. Just like the jet engine blade, applying immense heat to two different contacting metals triggers the Kirkendall effect. The iron from the steel and the aluminum and silicon from the coating interdiffuse at totally asymmetric rates.
Leaving voids.
Massive voids. Research by Dr. Dongwei Fan and Professor Bruno de Kooman provides vivid electron microscope imagery showing massive Kirkendall voids forming and growing right at the steel coating interface within minutes of heating, well before the quench even happens.
So anytime you put two different metals together and add thermal energy, you're playing a high-stakes game of atomic musical chairs.
That's a good way to put it.
And you're always going to be left with concentrated empty seats that compromise the strength of the final product. But heat isn't the only way to scramble a crystal lattice. In nuclear reactors, the radiation basically acts like a microscopic wrecking ball.
Yeah, all of the previous examples rely on thermal energy driving the atoms to naturally jump. But in a nuclear reactor, you are dealing with violent kinetic displacement.
It's physical impacts.
Right. When a high-energy neutron strikes the steel containment vessel, it doesn't just bump an atom, it transfers massive kinetic energy, creating what we call a primary knock-on atom.
It knocks it completely out of place.
It does. And then that atom ricochets through the lattice, physically displacing hundreds of other atoms in a violent collision cascade.
So the radiation is forcefully blasting the atoms out of their designated spots.
You are left with a wake of structural destruction. Massive amounts of interstitial atoms squeezed awkwardly between the grid lines where they don't belong and massive amounts of pure vacancies where they used to be.
Just chaos.
Total chaos. Both the vacancies and the displaced atoms are highly mobile and eventually migrate through the lattice. But because they migrate at wildly different speeds, the slower moving defects get left behind in massive localized concentrations.
They clump together just like the thermally driven pores.
Exactly. In heavily irradiated reactor materials, we observe the excess vacancies condensing together into massive, flat, two-dimensional structures known as vacancy disks.
Vacancy disks?
Imagine a microscopic, flattened bubble of pure emptiness embedded directly inside the structural steel, holding back a nuclear reaction.
A disk of pure nothing. That is haunting. Okay, we need to zoom out because we've covered incredible ground today.
We really have.
We started with this deeply intuitive idea that the materials holding up our world, you know, the structural steel, the copper wiring, the jet engines, are perfect, solid, densely packed blocks of mass.
Which is what everyone assumes.
But we've discovered that not only is microscopic perfection physically impossible due to the unbreakable laws of entropy, but that materials actually require their missing pieces, their vacancies, just to function.
The physical world relies entirely on its own flaws to operate.
Atoms use that empty space to travel and react. And because different elements travel at different speeds through the lattice, they leave behind these massive atomic traffic jams of nothingness.
The Kirkendall porosity.
Right. We saw how this Kirkendall effect drives the solid-state creation of shape-shifting memory alloys, complicates the microscopic wiring of high-tech superconductors, and threatens the structural integrity of jet engine coatings and nuclear reactor vessels. The solid world around you is actually a bustling, breathing, wildly imperfect, and highly porous environment.
This raises an important question, though. Because if we push that logic further, it raises a totally new paradigm for the future of material science.
What do you mean?
Throughout this entire discussion, we've viewed Kirkendall porosity as a hurdle to manage, right? A structural defect to minimize. But what if we stop fighting the nothingness and start weaponizing it?
Weaponizing the empty space.
Imagine training an advanced AI to perfectly predict and map Kirkendall diffusion paths at the atomic level across dozens of different elemental combinations.
Oh, wow.
Instead of accidentally creating voids, we could purposefully design binary alloys that interdiffuse during manufacturing to create a mathematically programmed continuous network of nanoscale voids.
Like perfectly planned empty space.
Exactly. We could engineer a metamaterial that is 90% empty space, making it lighter than air, but because the remaining interconnected lattice is geometrically optimized by AI, it could be structurally stronger than titanium.
That's unbelievable.
We wouldn't be building with matter anymore. We would literally be building our technology out of nothingness.
Engineering the ghosts inside the machine. From a solid steel beam right down to a microscopic puzzle with a single missing piece. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. We will see you next time.